Campus 103.7 presents a collaboration between me, Patricia Salomone, and my friend Stephen Mangione for the reviewing of the book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth by Stephen Mangione. This is another review in the series A Book, A Thousand Stories. Welcome once more to our listeners for another episode of The Path to Redemption, the last in the series as we reach program 13 on Campus 103.7 Radio, and chapters 34 and 35 for the closing of the book. As with James and Maria, we walked the pilgrimage through the hills and plains of Spain, from Saint Jean Pied de Port to Santiago de Compostela. We have got to know and see, with the imagination, the small and the grand towns along the way, with their famous buildings and cathedrals. We have also become aware of the many facets of the Camino, which comprise religion, spirituality, determination, courage, and the sense of adventure. Most importantly, we have become involved in the human search for understanding, compassion, redemption and forgiveness, for the extremes of human behavior. In order to come to the conclusion of this search, we must catch up with Maria and James, whose experiences have been a sample of what each and every one of us could live through. Maria and James are, of course, fictitious characters who, while growing through all this, also find love. Maria is mentally exhausted. Imagine the confusion in her mind. She hates what James has done, yet she loves him for what he is in her imagination. As she begins to imagine a situation in which she could forgive him, she cannot decide whether or not she should continue her relationship with him. Besides, how would her sister Joanna feel about this? She decides to call Joanna and frankly ask for her opinion. Over a long phone call, the two sisters talk the series of events over. Maria confesses that she has fallen in love with James, a fellow pilgrim. "I felt he was the person I had been looking for. He even proposed to me, and I accepted because I wanted to be with him for the rest of my life." She explains that after she opened out to him about her guilt over her mother's death, James shocked her with the confession that he was the culprit who ran over her mother. While he tried to excuse himself for the actual accident, he could not reconcile himself with the fact that he did not stop to give the old lady proper aid. So they both were facing the Camino in search of redemption, and of the inner peace that both had lost, incredibly, for the same reason. I felt this tremendous wrench in my guts. I couldn't bear to be with him, and yet I continued to love him. On the other hand, Maria explains that she is delaying her return to Malta because James is recovering from serious injuries in hospital after he had saved the life of a child that was about to be run over. The author recounts the sincere exchange between the sisters over the matter concerning them both. But Joanna wishes for Maria's happiness and puts aside hard feelings, concluding, "I believe that ultimately it is something you have to decide for yourself. If he means so much to you, I will go along with whatever you decide, although it will not be easy for me either." Grateful to her sister, Maria still remains in a quandary. The man who ran over her mother and left her to die also risked his life to save the life of the little boy. So this is the James she loves, with his weakness and his strength. While she can forgive him, can she live with him for the rest of her life? Perplexed and still in this uncertain mood, Maria again visits James at the hospital and finds him much improved. He is soon to be released. "And what will he do then?" Maria asks. She realizes the time has come for her to take a decision. She tells him that she can forgive him, but cannot decide about continuing their relationship. He pleads with her to listen to her heart. At this, she felt a sudden and irresistible surge of feeling for him. She took his hands in hers, and she felt their warmth, pulled him towards her, put her arms around him, and pressed him tightly against her. Notwithstanding all that had happened, they both admitted that they needed each other and wanted to spend their lives together. James was overjoyed, and for a long time they sat holding each other until visiting hours were over. Following morning, for James, the gloom and depression he had been over in the last days suddenly evaporated, as though they had never been. He felt renewed physically as well, and looked forward impatiently to his release from the hospital. Finally, alone in the hotel room, they kissed passionately, and after unpacking their things, they went for a slow walk in the main square, the Plaza de Obradoiro.
As I had explained in the last episode, At the center of Santiago lies the Plaza de Obradoiro, or Praza do Obradoiro in Galician. It is surrounded by four important buildings. Apart from the Parador, the Hostal de los Reyes Católicos, and of course the cathedral, there is the Palacio Rajoy and the Colegio de San Jerome. The four buildings are said to represent the four powers of the city: church, state, university, and the pilgrimage. When pilgrims arrive in Santiago, they invariably congregate in this square and sing and dance, find friends they lost along the way, or stand in awe before the facade of the great cathedral.
The plaza was crowded with groups of pilgrims celebrating their arrival. There were also several tourists admiring the monuments of this historic city. In the distance, a bagpipe player played a plaintive sound.
Anyone visiting this square will hear bagpipes playing. A solitary bagpipe player stands under an arcade of the square playing. This harks back to Galicia's ancient Celtic culture, which dates to the millennium before Christ. The northwest of Spain, and especially Galicia, shared this Celtic culture with the rest of Western Europe. At the time when St. James came to preach there, there was an important Druidic center in the area at Finisterre.
By slowly walking to Praza de Quintana, they could enter the cathedral without having to climb the monumental stairs in the front, too hard now for James to attempt. The interior of the cathedral left James speechless. The author has described it to us in the last episode. But Stephen, where are the Apostle James's remains to be found?
Just behind the high altar, there is a statue of St. James, and all pilgrims are expected to walk up the few stairs behind it and to embrace it. The remains of the Apostle are kept in a silver casket in the crypt of the cathedral, together with those of two of his disciples, Saints Theodosius and Athanasius.
Maria, who had already been there before, showed James round. She showed him the famous Portico della Gloria, with its history of the family of Jesus Christ, sculptured centuries ago for the benefit of the then illiterate faithful. They realized that the church was filling in, and that soon the pilgrims' mass was about to start. In gratitude for all that they had gone through, they knelt at the pews, while a small solitary nun led the singing, accompanied by the great organ. As the mass neared its end, a group of six or seven men, dressed in burgundy-colored uniforms, stepped up to the altar and lowered a very large censer that was hanging from the dome.
A mass for pilgrims is held four times a day in Santiago Cathedral, with the principal ones being those at noon and 7:30 p.m. They are held on the high altar and often concelebrated by several priests coming from different countries, who will address their pilgrim countrymen in their respective languages. It is customary for the provenance of the pilgrims arriving on the day to be announced. It is a very grand spectacle, which includes music from the great organ and the singing of hymns. The cathedral is always full of pilgrims and locals, especially when news leaks out that the Botafumeiro is to be deployed. The Botafumeiro is a very large silver turbine or sensor, weighing some 62 kilos, which is suspended from the roof of the cathedral at the crossing between the nave and the transept. A group of 8 tiraboleros alternately pull and release the ropes to which it is attached, causing it to swing higher and higher until it almost reaches the vault of the cathedral. As it swings through the transept at speeds of up to 70 kilometers per hour, it discharges large amounts of smoke from the burning incense. This symbolizes the pilgrims' prayers rising up to God, although it has been suggested that this was also done to counteract the smell of hundreds of unwashed pilgrims who would fill the cathedral in days gone by. It is deployed during 12 feast days in the year, although it can also be requested by groups against payment. It is an unusual and very rousing spectacle, and for many the highlight of their visit to the cathedral.
James and Maria were moved by the Mass and walked out of the cathedral hand in hand. Relieved and feeling hungry, they sat at Maria's favorite restaurant to enjoy a selection of tapas. Then James took Maria's hand and told her how he felt reborn after feeling that all had been lost. Both feeling a warm glow from the food and wine and with a strong desire for each other, they returned to the hotel. Their lovemaking that night was ecstatic. The following day, they decided that, notwithstanding all that had happened, notwithstanding the deviation in the aim for the walking of the Camino, they had to complete their journey to Finisterre, albeit by bus, as James could not possibly walk far.
Traditionally, Santiago would not be the pilgrim's last stop. After that, he would walk a further 90 kilometers to Finisterre, where he would burn his old clothes before donning new ones, to signify his rebirth following the Camino pilgrimage. Finisterre, or Cabo Fisterra as it is known in Galician, is a cape which was once thought to be the westernmost point of continental Europe, and its name comes from the Latin finis terre, meaning land's end. The cape rears high above sea level. From a vantage point here, pilgrims and visitors will watch the sun setting over the Atlantic Ocean, while the waves beat against the cliffs at the foot of the cape, and countless seabirds whirl and soar above them. It is a truly impressive spectacle, and a fitting end to the long journey that the pilgrim has completed.
Thank you.
Finisterre, the view was spectacular. The shimmering sea stretched out to the horizon on three sides of the peninsula, while on the landward side, the rugged Galicia coastline vanished into the distance. Slowly the sun sank lower and lower, and the sky first turned golden, then red, with the clouds reflecting the red light. Everyone was spellbound. James explained how at Finisterre, pilgrims discarded their old clothes to symbolize a new beginning in their lives. Indeed, it was to be for them a new beginning, as they gave each other the promise of marriage. And when he least expected it, James received the most beautiful of gifts. "There is something else you should know," Maria said with a wide smile on her face. "I am pregnant. It must have been that wonderful first night we spent together in León. We are going to have a baby." Happy and with renewed energy, they take the bus back to Santiago, where they celebrate with a glass of the best champagne and the famous almond cake called the Tarta de Santiago. As they walked back to their hotel, they hear from the other side of the Plaza de Obradoiro a familiar sound. Again, it is La Tuna players, the leitmotiv of their love story which began at Logroño, where both, separately, had first met these joyful musicians. Pasa la tuna en Santiago cantando muy quedo romances de amor. Luego la noche en sus ecos los cuela de ronda por todo balcón. Y allá en el templo de Apóstol Santo, una niña llora ante su patrón. Porque la capa del duro que adora no lleva la cinta que ella le bordó. Porque la capa del duro que adora no lleva la cinta que ella le bordó. Cuando la tuna te dé serenata, no te enamores con porcelana. Y cada cinta que adorna mi capa es un trocito de corazón. Ay, ay, ay. Before bringing our story to an end, I would like our author, Stephen Manjon, to explain the important underlying narrative.
In reading this book, the reader goes through the process of guilt, repentance, atonement, and forgiveness, together with the protagonists. Both James, and to a lesser extent Maria, are plagued by the guilt they felt following the death of Maria's mother. They are both repentant for their respective failings, and both seek forgiveness, but feel that they need to go through a process of atonement. They both believe that they might find this in walking the Camino as pilgrims, a traditional way of offering penance in the past. However, as they walk, they find that the pleasure of walking far outdoes the physical stress and pain. James and Maria start to question whether they are really atoning for what they did, particularly after they meet and fall in love. But then, nemesis strikes, and with the realization of who they really are, comes tremendous mental anguish. Their love for each other against Maria's hatred for the killer of her mother. Further anguish comes following James's accident, and with it comes physical pain and the threat to James's life. James saving the boy and becoming injured himself is a reflection of the earlier accident. It is a heroic action which contrasts with his cowardly behavior earlier. The realization this brings with it that humans are fallible creatures and that they can drop to great depths but also rise to great heights leads to forgiveness on Maria's part and a sense of atonement by both.
On their way back to their homeland, Malta, Maria assures James that Joanna will understand and forgive. Neither Joanna nor Maria would want to inform the police, as both will be looking forward to the birth of this baby to a happy home. In the end, Maria pronounces the most beautiful words in the book. "Our child will be the grandchild of my mother. She would have been ecstatic about her newest grandchild. You will be instrumental in bringing him up to be a decent and responsible person. That is the way. On this happy note, dear listeners, we bring the review of Stephen Munjon's book, The Path to Redemption, to an end. Stephen and I wish to thank Jody De Bono and Redent Abdillah, the two sound technicians at Campus 103.7, whose collaboration has been precious.